Hi, this is K.M. Weiland, and you are listening to the very first Wordplay podcast. Wordplay, the writing life of K.M. Weiland, has been my blogging venture for the last few years, and I've had a blast writing it every week and interacting with all the great folks who have stopped by. But the time has finally come to branch out. I realize that, in our ever more hectic lifestyles, demands upon our time are increasing every week, even every day sometimes. Because taking the time to sit down and read even a short blog post isn't always feasible, many of us prefer to have our information on a handy MP3, which we can toss onto our iPods and listen to on the go. So, in the interest of helping us all save a little time, I'm very excited to offer this podcast as a subsidy to my regular weekly blog posts. I'm admittedly an utter newbie at this recording bit, much more comfortable with a keyboard under my fingers rather than a microphone. So I'd be more than pleased to hear any suggestions or critiques you may have. You can contact me on my website at www.kmweiland.com or my blog at wordplay-kmweiland.blogspot.com. That said, please enjoy this week's recording, Branded, Negotiating Consumerism in Fiction. In recent years, consumerism has taken an increasingly prominent place in entertainment. Powerhouse companies have gone from mere advertisements, commercials during television shows, billboards outside ballparks, joint advertisements with blockbuster movies, to what many people consider a blatant overuse and occasionally even abuse of product placement in sports coliseums, movies, TV shows, and even books, such as Lauren Weisberger's best-selling The Devil Wears Prada. What probably began as a harmless and even unconscious attempt by authors to bring a sense of realism and verisimilitude to their writing has been eagerly pounced upon by advertising firms, who now pay movie producers and authors to feature their products in their stories. In the literary world, this has become most obvious in young adult fiction, specifically books aimed at girls, which even go to such lengths as interrupting the flow of the story in order to state lengthy product details. As a writer who rarely reads popular young adult fiction, I remained mostly unaware of this phenomenon until last year, when I neared the conclusion of my fantasy novel Dreamers Come. Because half of the novel takes place in 21st century Chicago, it provided me the first opportunity in years to write about a modern-day setting, complete with brand names. In my ever-evolving quest to find that perfect telling detail which will bring the scenes to life before my reader's eyes, I included brand names, especially when it came to food and cars. My main character's best friend owned a Volkswagen Bug. His ex-girlfriend drove a Ford Mustang. His boss wanted a Dodge Viper. In the first draft, Orville Redenbacher, Eggo's, Nesty, Holiday Inn, Days Inn, Four Seasons, Diet Coke, and who knows what else made an appearance. Trusting that most readers would be able to instantly recognize and visualize these famous brand names, I piled them in. But then, around about the time I was winding down my first draft, the whole consumerism issue finally penetrated my bubble of oblivion. My first reaction was to shrug and say, "Who cares?" Obviously, this debate could have no effect on my writing, since none of these big names were paying me so much as a thin dime for displaying their wares among my pages. And I still believe that. As a reader, I have no problem stumbling across the occasional brand name. If generality is the death of the novel, then specificity, including the specificity of brand names, must bring it life. But that doesn't negate the pitfalls of branding in fiction. Following are two of the biggest reasons I decided it was often better to avoid specifying common and popular consumer names. Reason number one. Brand names, like pop culture, are often short-lived. What is universally recognized today may be forgotten in as little as 5 years. This can seriously damage the longevity of your writing. Even assuming that the obscurity of the brand names isn't enough to keep the book out of readers' hands, your story will still be dated. How much better to cut the brand names and keep your work evergreen for generations to come? Reason number two. Brand names, if overused, can actually detract from the vividness of your writing rather than add to it. For example, Mike pulled his orange Volkswagen Bug up to the curb in front of Walmart, gulped the last swig from his silver Diet Coke can, and ate the last of his Snickers. He opened his car door and banged it against the Ford Mustang parked next to him. A woman, dressed in Prada with a Gucci handbag over her arm, leapt out of the Mustang and started screaming at him and dialing for the police on her Razor phone. Now, honestly, is that not distracting? It may be specific down to the last detail, but instead of enlightening the reader, those details end up obliterating the story. In the end, after pondering the question, I decided, as often happens, that a happy medium is best. The Bug, the Mustang, and the Diet Coke stayed. But most of the brand names I'd so gleefully added to my first draft were axed in the second. Whether my approach has ended up being balanced is for my readers still to decide. but I know without doubt that my manuscript is now stronger thanks to my awareness of consumerism and its growing effect on fiction. Thank you for listening to the Wordplay Podcast. To read a transcript of this episode, visit me on the web at wordplay-kmweiland.blogspot.com, and be sure to listen again next week.